is the power of the tongue, or the proper use of the tongue. Someone said that words are vehicles of communication, and they are. You know, we communicate even without words. One man said one time, preach a sermon and use words if necessary. I believe that we all preach sermons every day. And people observe what we do and where we go and how we live. And I believe it, I'm not real sure who the poet was that said that we ought to recognize that we live a sermon before the world every day. I'd rather see a sermon than to hear one any day. But this morning I want to talk to you about words and the fact that they are vehicles of communication. And how we communicate to one another truly is important. One reason for that is the fact that we all have problems with communication. We really do. And words can build up or words can tear down. Jesus obviously was concerned about the way that we use our tongue and the words that we speak. For in the book of Matthew 12, he said, "For every idle word that man shall speak, he shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned." So it behooves us this morning to consider the use of the tongue. Just what does the Bible say? David in the book of Psalms 119 said, "May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O God." I've heard people use that passage with regard to worship, and certainly that's true. But I believe in our everyday lives we should consider that thought as well. God, may the words of my mouth, and not only the meditation of my heart, but may they both be acceptable in thy sight. And then David in Psalms 141 and verse 3 said, "Ask God to set a guard over the door of his lips." Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes I just speak off cuff, and I say things without thinking. But I'm aware of the fact that God encourages us to be very, very careful about the words that we use or the words that we employ in everyday language. And so this morning I want to talk about not only the proper use of the tongue, but I want first of all to talk about the improper use of the tongue. In the book of Proverbs 6, there are seven things that God hates or mentioned here by King Solomon. And three of them have to do with the way that we use our tongue. I want you to notice that he mentions a lying tongue. We know that God says that all liars shall have their part, which in the lake of fire, Revelation 21 and verse 8. He mentions the false witness, and then he mentions those who sow discord among the brethren. You know, many churches today are divided and fragmented and even polarized simply because of the words that are often spoken by those within the body. Families are often divided as a result of the same. In James 4 and verse 11, the man of God said, "Speak not evil one of another, brethren, for he that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother speaketh evil of the law." Jesus, again, in Matthew 7 and verse 1, condemns the way that we judge one another. And the way that we judge one another often is by the way that we speak one of another. Now, the improper use of the tongue results in horrible consequences. Did you know the Bible often says that it results in division? We have words in our language sometimes that bring about division within the body of Jesus. Churches are often divided simply by what we often call wagging tongues and malicious gossip. But the same thing is true in the family. The same thing is true nationally and even internationally. We have ongoing now a Cold War with North Korea. And all of that war is about words. It's similar to that that we experienced many, many years ago with the Soviet Union. But you know, we often have wars that go on in the church. People talk about one another. People get upset with one another. We say things that we ought not to be saying. And it was to that end that Paul would write to the Corinthian brethren in 1 Corinthians 1 and say, "Let there be no divisions among you, but that you speak the same thing and be of the same mind one toward another." Now you have to remember that much of the division that's going on in Corinth obviously was from what was being said and what was being taught. But not only is the improper use of the tongue, or does it result in division, but it also results in destruction as well. You know, we only have three examples in biblical writ where the devil actually spoke. Now, we believe the devil speaks to man today in the sense that he doesn't speak to us audibly, but he does get into our mind and into our heart and tries to draw us away from God. But we remember when the devil first spoke in the book of Genesis chapter 3, when he spoke unto Eve and he said, "Yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat of the tree of the garden." And Jesus calls him a liar in John 8 and verse 44. But then he actually, in a conversation with God that takes place in the book of Job 1 and verse 7, and God is asking from whence he comes, and he says, "From walking to and fro upon the face of the earth." And then we find the devil in conversation with Jesus in the book of Matthew 4, where Jesus is out in the wilderness and he's being tempted by the devil himself. But think about all the destruction that we find in the world today as a result of the devil himself. And folks, I can tell you that the improper use of the tongue is of the devil. All the gossip that we do and all of the malicious slander and all of the lying and all of the obscene language, and we could just go on and on this morning about the improper use of the tongue. But not only does the improper use of the tongue result in division and destruction, it results in death as well. For in Proverbs 18 and verse 21, Solomon again said that death and life are in the power of the tongue. Listen to these other passages, if you will. In Proverbs 21 and verse 23, Solomon said, "Whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from trouble." You agree with that? Amen. And then he says, James in James 3 and verse 6, "The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity, and so is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and it setteth on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell." But listen to James 3 and verse 8. "But the tongue can no man tame, for it is an unruly evil, it is full of deadly poison." That's why we must be very, very careful to stay in control of what we say. In James 1 and 26, "If any man among you seems to be religious and he does not bridle his own tongue, he deceiveth his own heart, and this man's religion is in vain." So the church is often hurt, brethren, by the words that we say, and we ought to be very, very careful. Sometimes we say things in a flippant way without really thinking about what we're saying. And we know that people are injured emotionally, people are injured spiritually, and a lot of times people leave the church simply over words that have been spoken in an unkind way. Well, let's move on this morning to the proper use of the tongue. What am I to say? What are words that are wholesome and healthy? Well, in Proverbs 25 and verse 11, Solomon said that a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in baskets of silver. Did you know that words can lift us to heights of ecstasy, but they can also slam us into the depths of despair? If you were to simply stop and think about the words that you speak in a day, do you know it is estimated that we speak about 10,000 words on an average in a day's time? Think about that. 10,000 words. How many words do we speak in kindness, and how many words do we speak in a negative, derogatory way with those that we meet? Words can wreck or revive. They can restore or they can ruin. Now, I want you to think with me this morning about the words that I consider to be apples of gold and pitchers of silver. You know, if we could just let this represent one of those apples of gold, I believe that God says that we ought to speak happy words. Do you know that most of the time we find ourselves in a vernacular of speaking unkind, caustic words to people around us? Have you ever noticed that people complain most of the time? We are a hypercritical people. We don't speak happy words. We often sing about it. We say, "Sing and be happy," and we ought to let the world know that we're happy people. But by the way that we live and the way that we act and the words that we employ in everyday language, I can tell you it is far from happy words. You know what? It doesn't take you long to be around people and you will find out where their heart really is. How do I know that? Well, the Bible also teaches that the issues of life flow from the heart. And the Bible says, "Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh." And we will generally offer an index to the heart by the words that we speak. We ought to be extremely careful about what we say. We really should. In Proverbs 17 and verse 22, again, Solomon said that a cheerful heart is good medicine, but a downcast spirit dries up the bones. And it does, folks. It really does. You just think about it. Words can lift us and they make us feel better. That's the reason the Bible encourages us to encourage one another. We ought to be happy people. In Proverbs 15 and verse 13, Solomon said that a merry heart doeth good like medicine. It brings about a cheerful countenance. But by sorrow, the heart and the spirit is broken. Have you ever considered how many times in the New Testament Jesus would say to be of good cheer? In Matthew 9:2, John 16 and 33, it's one of my favorite passages. Jesus just says, be of good cheer. We ought to be a happy people. I know sometimes people have great difficulty being happy and even speaking happy words. Sometimes, and we want to convey to someone the joy of our life, and maybe even when we want to pass a compliment on someone, sometimes it just does not come out like we want it to come out. I heard about a woman one time who went to a doctor. And anyway, when she went to the doctor, she walked in and she said, "Doctor, something is terribly wrong with me." And she said, "This morning when I got up," she said, "I went to the mirror, I looked at myself, my eyes were all bugged out, my hair was all over my head, I had wrinkles all over my face." She said, "Doctor, what is wrong with me?" And he said, "Well, I'll tell you one thing, honey, it sure isn't your eyesight." Well, you know what? There are some people in the world that just do not know how to communicate what they're trying to get across. We ought to be a people of happy words, encouraging words. Now, Proverbs 12 and verse 25 says, "Heaviness in the heart of a man maketh it stoop, but a good word maketh it glad." So we're not only to be people who speak happy words, but we are to be people who speak encouraging words. Wouldn't it be wonderful in the church today if we had more people that spent their time speaking words of encouragement than words that were derogatory and demeaning and speaking disparagingly of one another in the kingdom of God? Folks, I mean this seriously. We ought to be a people who lift up. We spend most of our time tearing down. We really do. Words of appreciation, words of a complimentary nature, those words can change a person's day. They really can. Sometimes people fail to live up to their responsibilities, and they fail because they are discouraging instead of encouraging. You know what we will do? We will walk across the street. We really will. A busy street to greet someone who has offered something nice to say about us. But on the other hand, we will walk around the block to avoid the person who criticizes us in life. We ought to be a people who are reminded every day to speak encouraging words. We really should. We need more encouraging words. Think about why Paul would mention people by name in the epistles. Think about the fact that he would encourage those people. And he would mention the fact that they were loved and that they were devoted and that they were addicted to serving God. I don't think that's by accident. I believe that we ought to be a people that are encouraging in every way to people who are in the church. Folks, you can turn on the television, you can listen to the daily or read the daily newspaper, and all you will find are discouraging words. We need more encouragement in the body of Jesus. In Proverbs, the 15th chapter and verse 26, Solomon again said that the words of the pure are pleasant words, but the words of a talebearer are as wounds. Proverbs 18 and verse 8. We can be destructive with our words. We really can. We can destroy. You can assassinate someone. You don't have to go out and take a gun. You can assassinate someone with your words. And I want to tell you something. I've seen some people in the church. I know probably other preachers in this audience could say the same thing. I have seen people in the church through the years who have assassinated people. They have assassinated character. They have assassinated their integrity simply by the words that they have chosen. They really have. I had a lady one time who came to me and she said, "Preacher, I have come to lay my tongue on the altar." And I said, "You know what? I don't know if the altar's big enough." Folks, I want to tell you something. I am serious. I have seen some people in my lifetime who have done nothing more than to stir up trouble in the church, who have done nothing more than divide because they couldn't get their way. And they had a private agenda, and that's just the way they work. I believe that God says, let's speak words of encouragement. But not only happy words and not only words of encouragement, folks. We ought to be people who spend our time not talking about the stock market, not talking about interest rates, not talking about sporting events. And I want to tell you something, all those are great, and it's not wrong to do that. But you know what? Wouldn't it be great if we had people in the church today who were willing to speak to their neighbor about Jesus as much as they were to speak to their neighbor about the weather and about the economy? I believe that God says the church has a responsibility to teach our neighbors, folks. We must be committed to preaching the gospel once again, and we've gotten away from that. Sometimes we wonder why churches aren't growing and why they're dying. It's because we have ceased to speak words for Christ. We really have. Speaking for Jesus does not belong to a privileged class, but it does mean that it involves each and every one of us, all of those who belong to Jesus. Do you know that many of the sins that we commit today are not sins of commission? Now, here I get amused sometimes, and I hear brethren pray, and they say, God, please forgive us of the sins of commission and the sins of omission. And we say that so flippant in our prayers that I wonder if we know what the sins of omission really are. We know what the sins of commission are. We don't want to get out there and do something immoral. We don't want to get out there and do something that we know that's going to hurt the church. But I want to tell you, brethren, many, many times we hurt the church by the things that we don't do. It is true. The sins of omission. Many of us are omitting speaking words for Christ. We are omitting preaching and teaching the gospel to those that are lost. If you were to stop and think this morning, even in your neighborhood, think about all the people that you could really lead to Jesus. Now, I know that many of us take a negative attitude, and we say, well, there's just no way that will ever, ever happen. I want to tell you something, folks. It can happen, and it does happen. When we preach the gospel of Christ and when we try to speak words for Jesus, you will make a dent in the lives of other people. You really will. You will impress them, believe it or not. Let me tell you something that happened to me the other day. We were down in Palestine, and we were over at Walmart. That seems to be the meeting place for a lot of folks. And Audrey and I had turned the corner, and there was a lady standing in the aisle. And she came back, and she said, aren't you Brother Manuel? I said, yes. And she said, I just want to tell you that I watch your TV program every Sunday. And she said, I want you to know that that program really has made a difference in my life. She said, I have recently been converted to Jesus. And she said, not only me, but my mother and my daughters and my sister. And she says, I'm a bilingual teacher, and I'm now teaching some Spanish people that I teach every day. And she says, I'm trying to lead them to the Lord. She said, I just want you to know that those television programs really do make a difference, folks. And I really believe that. I believe that when we teach and when we try to share the gospel of Christ and employ the use of words, it will have its effect on people every day. It really does. But we must exercise that beautiful privilege that God has given unto us. I know it is a wonderful thing to be able to be a Christian, folks, but we must share that Christian experience with other people around us. And we must use that tongue that God has given us for holy purposes, not just to come and sit in an assembly and sing praise unto God. Sometimes we can speak words with it not really coming from the heart. Jesus said, in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrine the commandments of men. He said, they praise me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Let it be in our heart, but let it be on our lips as well. And may God help us to use our tongue to build and not tear down. May He help us to use our tongue to strengthen and encourage, not weaken, folks. Several years ago, I heard about a young man who was suffering from cancer. And he was about to undergo an operation in one of the large hospitals in our country. And when the surgeon made a careful examination, he discovered that the only hope of saving this young man's life was the removal of his tongue. The young man had already been taken to the operating room. And when the surgeon, in a tender and sympathetic way, explained to the sufferer that even though the operation would be successful, that he would never, ever be able to speak a word again. And he asked them if there was anything that he wished to say before the surgery commenced. For a moment, a shadow crossed his brow, and he thought to never be able to speak again. To never be able to say a word for the Lord that he loved, for the master that he served. But soon the shadow passed, and a smile lighted upon his face. He sat up, lifted up his voice, and sang the hymn, "There is a fountain filled with blood, drawn from Emmanuel's veins. And sinners plunge beneath that flood, lose all their guilty stains." And before the third verse was reached, not an eye of those who stood around his bed were dry. How he sang! Then came the last verse. "Then in a nobler, sweeter song, I'll sing thy power to save. When this poor lisping, stammering tongue lies silent in the grave." The anesthetic was administered. The operation was performed. But the patient never regained consciousness. Little did he know that his last song on this earth would be his first song in the presence of his God. Words. Words can build, but words can destroy. And I would hope this morning that each of us would recognize the importance of how we use our words, what we speak, when, where, and how. And may we always seek to encourage, never, ever be guilty of tearing down, but may he help us to use our words to lead others to Jesus. May our words be happy words. May our words be encouraging words. And may God bless us to that end.